I hope you had a great lunch, and I trust from how vibrant the conversation is in the room right now that everybody came to know each other and have a chance to learn about each other's work. We're so delighted to see that, and so delighted about the active participation. I have the tough job of slowing down your conversation, though, now just for a couple minutes. We can hear from the panel and then get the lively interaction going again. I just want to introduce the chair of our afternoon panel, Rising Voices, Realizing Rights Through Participation. You can recognize that we've been discussing that theme all along. But to be chaired this afternoon by Agnes Calamard. She's Executive Director of Article 19, an international human rights organization which promotes and defends freedom of expression and access to information globally. She also led and founded the Humanitarian Accountability Partnership, first international self-regulatory body for humanitarian agencies committed to strengthening accountability in disaster-affected populations. She was the former chef de cabinet for the Secretary General of Amnesty International, as well as a former research policy coordinator at Amnesty. So join me in welcoming Agnes. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone, and first of all, thank you very much to Jody and to Maggie Institute for inviting me to this very interesting conference. I'm finding it really stimulating. I'm sorry about my hat and my scarf and my voice. I'm fighting a cold, so please forgive me. I'm trying to be my best despite a little bit of being under the weather. My presentation this afternoon is going to be a little bit reminiscent to some of the things I've said yesterday, so another apology to people who were in the room yesterday. I will do more than what I did yesterday, don't worry, but I just wanted to let you know that there will be a few things in common. The topic of making equal rights real made me reflect quite a bit about the context within which we are trying to do that right now. And I thought it was quite important to remind us all that the global trends at the moment are not particularly positive ones as far as human rights protection and implementation are concerned. Many people have spoken of a slippery slope, and some have mentioned reversal of stagnation on many human rights, including civil and political rights. The one that I work on, freedom of expression, has been weakened and eroded, and the standard of some of the values which we thought were safe have also been eroded. For instance, the right not to be tortured, and sexual and reproductive rights are under threat around the world. So I think we need to keep in mind that context when we are committing ourselves to make equal rights real. One of the aspects of this reversal and negative trend is what I have called legal regression by copycat. And it's a process whereby states are copying each other, not on their good laws, but on their bad laws. So it's a deterioration by imitation. The one that has really been at the heart of that process has been anything related to security and anti-terrorism. You've seen that like a snowballing around the world, everyone picking up some provisions or laws. Anti-extremism laws are being mirrored across the world. And all of them are actually contributing to making the environment for us, human rights activists, far more complicated to operate. And around the world, we are confronting cases of individuals, human rights defenders, social activists, who are being threatened, charged, or imprisoned on charges related to anti-terrorism, extremism, violence, national security, and the lot. Which, in turn, this difficult context, which may be changing, I mean, this is very much the product of 9/11, and things may be shifting eventually. But this difficult context made me reflect a little bit on the human rights implementation framework that many human rights activists have used. I don't know if you used it, but the framework that has three components: the duty to respect, to protect, and to fulfill. Basically, we expect governments around the world to meet eventually those three duties for any rights to be fully exercised by its people. The respect duty is a negative obligation, and the protect and fulfill are two positive obligations. When I think of the challenge that has been posed to us, which is to make equal rights real, I automatically tend to think about the fulfillment obligations. How do we ensure that that rights are being fulfilled without any discriminations? But I think what we need to remember is, in view of the global context, that actually we cannot just focus on one kind of duty and forget the other to respect and protect. There are no linear model of rights implementation, and in fact, to make equal rights real, we do need to work on all three levels at all times, which is respect, protect, and fulfill. Because of my current work, I will talk more about information. But to give you an example, the right to receive information, for instance, you may see governments around the world, quite a large number, are passing laws on transparency, which will fall within the fulfillment dimension, while at the same time censoring the media, which means that they are not respecting the right of the media. So the necessity of working on all fronts, I think, is what is required to make equal rights real. I wanted to, in the second part of my presentation, give you the example of accessing governmental health information, just as an example of what are the challenges to make that rights real and what we are trying to do to tackle it. The challenges are threefold. Well, there are more, but the three main ones. The first one is that 100 countries have not adopted any laws which allow citizens to access information held by their government. The second one is where laws exist, they do not perform well. And around the world, the exercise of the rights to access information is limited to the privileged and educated class, and the indicators also indicate that mostly men do use the tools to access information. I think in this country you are probably falling under two, where you have the law, but at the moment it is being going through a number of setbacks. To make equal rights to information real, what we discovered at Article 19, and many other partners around the world have done the same thing, in other words, to ensure that these rights is offered to everyone and that everyone can exercise it, and not just a privilege, it's quite important to tie the exercise of this right with something that is very tangible to people's lives, and something that is really related to economic and social rights. So people must see how the law can improve their day-to-day life and dignity, and that in turn becomes the basis for the claim of citizen empowerment. If you go and start talking right away about citizen empowerment without demonstrating the link between the right to information and the possible exercise of economic and social rights, you will not go very far. And the second condition is that in order for that right to become real for everyone, you need to secure broad-based demand for information. Indigenous groups, health, disability, people working on climate change, all of them together can demonstrate the power of information. Sorry. So what do we do? What have we tried to do at Article 19, and not just us, but other people? I think what we need is first to, where there is no law, we need to devise legal campaigns that are thoughtful. And I can elaborate on that, but I think what we need to think about is how are those laws going to be used by the most vulnerable groups. And most legal campaigns kind of forget that, especially on the right to access information, which is quite technical. The second thing is we, to the extent possible, try to develop texts that are going to be pro-poor. So the text of the law must be devised with the most vulnerable in mind. For instance, we need to think of how use the poor access and use the law. So the information may not just be generated through internet requests, but there may be, there need to be other means for people without access to internet to access the information. There need to be a strong focus on proactive disclosure, because most people actually won't have the opportunity to make an information request, and yet they need the information. And finally, we need to have good professional mediators, CSOs and media, who are going to keep the issue on the front burner and who are going to mediate between sometimes a confusing and complex law and the people who are most in need for it. To make equal rights to information real, we also need, in terms of activities on our part, thing that you have already heard, so very quickly, monitoring compliance. In our case, it means making information requests on issues which are relevant to the people. We need to advocate for proactive disclosure. We need to dialogue with government officials, and we need training. That has become very important to, or we have discovered that actually there is a great need for understanding the power of information. People may instinctively understand it, but they doesn't necessarily translate into a strategy, a tactic, or an activity. And on the other hand, public officials in general are quite at loss when a new law is being passed on how to respond to information requests. So there is a great need for training again. And then, of course, we also need to hold the government to account for implementation of that law. And again, we've heard about it quite a lot this morning. We need domestic litigation, because in most cases the government will not pass on the information, or in many cases, so you need to go to court, at least at the beginning. Public denunciation campaign, the journalist, investigative journalism, demonstrating what they can do with access to information. We may need international and regional litigation and reporting at regional or international level, such as through the UPR process, anything that will allow us to hold the government to account. Okay? So I won't use my last 5 minutes. In the last frame, I just wanted to highlight maybe what could be a framework for making equal rights real, which I passed on yesterday. I think what we need to make equal rights real, first and foremost, are standards, and they need to be very good standards, and we all know that. The second the second item that will be needed for that framework is to combat ignorance, and by this I mean that too many people around the world, and indeed you were mentioning that this morning, Jody, do not know their rights. So combating ignorance through normal education, schooling, training, continued education, awareness raising, I think is an essential component of making equal rights real. The third component is the free flow of information. And one of the speakers earlier this morning did, in fact, I think most of them, did talk about how information is crucial to making equal rights real in the context of the land rights, but I think it applies everywhere. Where there is censorship, where people cannot access information, where people cannot give information on their legal rights, on where the media cannot report on corrupt practices and so on, you will not get equal rights real. So the free flow of information at all level is really essential to making equal rights real. I think the fourth item that we need, component, is courage. It's not in any particular order, by the way. One of the speakers yesterday talked about struggles, that in many cases we will not make equal rights real without struggles. So I thought maybe courage, to be on a more positive note. So we can't make equal rights real without a great deal of courage, and unfortunately many struggles as well. The fifth component, I believe, to make equal rights real is that we need organized and committed actors. We need a passion for change, we need individual leadership, we need social movements, all forms of activism that is organized enough to push for the equal rights to become real. And the sixth component, which we have mentioned on a number of occasions now, is of course accountability of those in power, most of the time governments, but increasingly other set of actors as well in the private sector and otherwise. And that means on our part, the instrument to litigate, the capacity to do that at all levels, domestic, regional, and international. That is a little bit reflecting what we have learned at Article 19 in terms of making the right to information equal for everybody. As I have mentioned, many privileged classes can access information. Around the world, people with access to internet, people with education, people with privilege actually do in general find some tools to access information and to get it. But to make that right equal for everyone, you need far more instruments at your disposal. And I thought that maybe this framework encapsulates a little bit of what is needed. Thank you very much.